Welcome to our Created to Work podcast for Modern Day Daniels out of Calvary Memorial Church in Oak Park. This podcast is for our Daniel Dinner group at Calvary, which is made up of guys working in secular jobs who, just like the prophet Daniel, serve a God who works. We'll host guests from around the country who have thought about the topic of incorporating their faith into their work and who are themselves modern-day Daniels, impacting their communities. This is an experiment to see what we can learn and how we can grow as a community.
If the work that you're doing on a regular or a semi-regular basis doesn't cause you to be courageous or to take risks or to pursue noble causes of justice and truth, then that's where I think, you know, as much as you're able, ask God the question, what am I missing?
So John is, you know, works with International Justice Mission, mobilizes the Chicagoland area and parts of the Midwest, and, you know, really appreciate you, you know, taking time to talk with me. So, yeah, if you want to just kind of describe, you know, your role and what you do and also like what International Justice Mission does, that'd be awesome to get us started.
Absolutely. Thank you, Josh. And thanks for giving me this opportunity. Yeah, so I'm based in Minneapolis. I've been here for about 20 years, but I've only been with IJM less than 1 year. So my job, as Josh mentioned, is to mobilize our church partners in the Midwest. So I've got about a 10-state region. I call it the Big Ten region. And I've got a bunch of churches that love IJM and want to support our work. And my job is to make sure that they are well-resourced, that they have whatever they need to be a strong partner, that any questions they have about who we are or what we do are addressed. So a lot of times that means me going there and speaking or finding another IJM speaker, or it might mean helping to figure out if someone wants to get a gift, where could they apply it and how can they learn more about what their gift is doing. If they want to go to the field, it means I might help them take a group to the field. Or if they're going to be in a country where IJM is already at work and they just want to do a drop-in visit, we can help make that happen as well. So it looks like there's a variety of different things that I try to do. But as I mentioned, it's a big region and keeps me busy, but that's wonderful. That's the way we like it.
I love it. And how would you describe like the work that International Justice Mission does? Like, what do you do?
Yeah. So International Justice Mission, this is our 20th year, and we are a faith-based nonprofit, active in about a dozen countries, and we protect the poor from violent crime. That's our main mission. So our job is to really work with local authorities to address issues of violence. And we do that by engaging with lawyers, with investigators, with social workers, with community activists, with pastors, other professionals. And we don't enact law. We simply try to work within a system to help enforce laws that are not being enforced. And what we found is that when law is not enforced, very often the ones who suffer the most are the poor and the most vulnerable. So those who can afford to pay for their own private security, often they're going to be okay. But if you don't have that capability or those means, often you are the ones who are forced to suffer the consequences. So we protect the poor from violence in four different ways. We rescue victims. It could be sex trafficking. It could be labor trafficking. It could be people whose land has been grabbed by oppressors. It could be people who have been abused by the police, by the very ones who they want to protect them. They're at the hands of those who are supposed to be protecting them. So we rescue victims. We bring criminals to justice. We restore survivors. And then our fourth and our long-term solution is to strengthen justice systems. So that's a lot, but let me give you an example. There's a lot of fantastic organizations, faith-based and secular, that are rescuing people out of modern-day slavery. And they're doing that by buying the slaves their freedom, which is fantastic for the slave whose freedom is bought at a price. In the short term, it's a great solution. It's also fantastic for the slave owner, quite frankly, because now the slave owner gets a payout, and if the long-term solution is not sought, that slave owner will probably turn around and reinvest those monies, secure more slaves, and wait for the next payout. So what IJM does is we will rescue those who are enslaved, but then we will work with local investigators and prayerfully hope and pray and work hard to arrest, prosecute, convict if they are guilty, and sentence to jail the perpetrators so that they can no longer operate with impunity, and so that the laws which are in place actually begin to work in favor of those who are enslaved. That's our belief, is that's how you long-term break the the enslavement of people, not just in the short term by buying them out, but long-term by making those who operate with impunity pay for their crimes.
And what was that? So it's the Restore Survivors, and what was that last one that you mentioned?
The last one is to strengthen justice systems so that they begin to work the way they're supposed to work. So ultimately, IJM would love to not have to be there. We're in about a dozen countries, and we've already left a couple countries because we have seen that the justice system has turned around and is now actually functional, and it's beginning to operate in the way that it's supposed to. And we consider that a huge success because we don't want to be there long term. Our ultimate goal is to equip, empower, enable justice systems to do their work. So we very much believe in the Romans 13 model, that elected officials are God's appointed representatives to serve the people in their communities or their nations. And so we're not there to embarrass, to shame, to humiliate, or to say, you know what, you people, you don't know what to do, so we are now going to parachute in and embarrass you by saying, no, we'll do it right. Ultimately, we need to work in conjunction with the elected officials because they're the ones who are going to be there long term. Now, if they're not doing their job, we will pray that new elections come and those people are replaced. So we don't have this, this fantasy that every person who's elected is going to do the right thing. But we do operate. We have a phrase that we use. It's the 15-70-15 model. We believe that there's about 15% of elected officials in countries that a lot of us believe are fully corrupt. We think about 15% probably are corrupt. And you know what? They're in it for the wrong reasons. They're probably not going to change, and they're doing things the wrong way. We also at IJM believe that there's probably about 15% of elected officials who are in it for the right reasons, and they want to do the right thing. And even when the tide may be going the other way, they are going to stay true, and their moral compass is sure, and they want to do the right thing. We also believe there's probably about 70% of people in power who are going to be swayed by public opinion and by whoever has the most votes, whoever has the most power. Those 70% are going to follow the crown. So our job with IJM is to empower the 15% to the good, because we believe that they're going to probably bring along a 70% who are going to be swayed, And in many countries, they've been swayed to the bad for so long that everyone thinks the whole country is corrupt. We think if you seed the good, it really could change the tide. And we've seen that in places like India, quite frankly. There's a lot of work still to be done in India, but the country that has more modern-day slaves than any country on the planet is India. We've seen a lot of progress in our work in India, and government officials who everyone thought were always going to be corrupt, well, they have now begun to change in different communities. So we do believe there are some positive things that can be done to make a long-term difference.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I mean, like what you're saying about how law is not enforced, when it's not enforced, the poor are those that are affected. So that's definitely, right. You know, I've definitely seen that to be true in different situations. How did you like get involved? You know, because I know you mentioned in a pre-call conversations that you come from a pastoral background in the Episcopalian right. Church. How did you sort of take that and, you know, come into this type of work? Like, what was that transition like for you, and why did that happen?
Yeah, actually, I'm Presbyterian, so I'm a Presbyterian pastor.
Oh, Presbyterian, thank you.
Yeah, yeah. So I served two churches for 15 years. I was in Madison, Wisconsin for 9 years, and then I was called to a church here in suburban Minneapolis. And I served there for about 6 years, and it was while pastoring this church in Minneapolis that I became familiar with IJM. Our church brought Gary Haugen, who's the founder and CEO of IJM. He came and spoke at our church and actually brought a message that had never been heard from our pulpit before. We'd talked a lot about biblical justice, probably not as much as we should have, but Gary brought a message about biblical justice that had a practical element to it that was new to our congregation. And so he provided hands-on ways for people in the congregation to actually engage in justice causes. And that was like a lightning bolt for our congregation. I, as the mission pastor at the time, realized that we had an opportunity here, and I formed what turned out to be a justice task force, a justice team, had a lot of lawyers in our congregation, and some of whom always thought, well, to be involved in mission, I had to go work at the soup kitchen, or I had to go swing a hammer with Habitat. Great things to do, but they never really thought that they could use their core competency, their legal skills, in the mission arena. And all of a sudden, we had a new opportunity for them to do that. So that was almost 20 years ago. We ended up as a congregation providing the seed money for IJM to launch their office in Kampala, Uganda in 2003.
Okay.
So I've been aware of IJM for 15 years, and the person who previously had my position with IJM retired last summer. And when I became aware that there was going to be an opening, I jumped at the chance to come on board with this organization that I had grown to love a great deal.
And how, you know, because we have, it sounds like you mentioned there's lawyers in your congregation. We have some lawyers in our group that are, you know, doing different things. And, you know, I think it's difficult to, you know, one of the questions that comes up a lot is like, how do I discern the vocational call of God in my life? And how is that, especially if I'm in a secular, maybe, position, I don't know if you could speak to, you know, those guys, like, you know, guys that maybe are in a secular career, either in legal profession or even in other professions, and how you'd recommend that people sort of discern their vocation.
Yeah, a huge question, right? I mean, that's like our life's challenge for most of us is, what does God want for me to do with the gifts that I've been given? So, you know, there's so many different ways to go at this. One, I think I've learned over the years, I used to have the sense that the will of God was almost like a target. There was a bullseye, and then there were concentric circles, and my goal was to get closer, as close to the middle of the will of God as possible. There's nothing wrong with that. But it was completely frustrating for me because I often felt like, wow, I don't know how close I am to the circle. I mean, I keep firing away, but it was hard for me to discern, God, where is your will? I didn't know where exactly to aim. I've come to learn, I think, that for me, the will of God is more simply being in relationship, in an ongoing relationship with a daily rhythm in which I constantly am re-engaging with my Creator, my Sustainer, my Redeemer, and asking the question, you know, what's your will? What do you want me to do? And for me, I think it's turned into, it's part of my spiritual discipline, is to, on occasion, just simply ask that question, Lord, am I in your will? What do you want me to do with the gifts you've given me? And if I don't hear a, you know, a loud voice telling me to take a different course, then I'm just going to keep moving forward in the same direction until God steers me differently. Luckily, I now am working with an organization, a ministry, IJM, that builds the practice of spiritual disciplines into our daily rhythm of work. And I know that not everyone in a secular job has that luxury, but for IJM, we have a half an hour of staff prayer that's built into the workday. And that is a chance for us as a community to re-engage with, okay, God, what do you want us to do here? Here's what we're doing. We want to serve you. Are we going in the right direction? If you're in a secular workplace, obviously, and that's not going to happen. So I think it's incumbent upon believers who are in a secular workplace to find, to create and to sustain space for that to happen on a regular basis. I think that, you know, for me, that's a daily rhythm. That may not be possible for everybody. But if you're not engaging in those types of spiritual disciplines, then I think it would be very frustrating if you're asking questions of vocation. And for me, I've also, you know, I've leaned on people who are much, much more learned than I am on questions of vocation. So Parker Palmer is one author that I have read. He has a book called Let Your Life Speak that has been very helpful. And Palmer says that vocation for him is that which I can't not do. So he says, I can't always explain why I want to do it. Mm-hmm. But I may not fully understand it myself, but I realize that it's something I can't not do. So if you're in a job that doesn't allow you to embrace your vocation, your calling, then that's a disconnect that I think you need to find a way to resolve with the help of Jesus. Now, I think we go through seasons, and there's some seasons, even as a pastor and even when I'm in a faith-based ministry, there's some seasons that are more satisfying than others. So I don't mean to say that every day is glorious now that I'm, you know, because I'm serving God and I can in the workplace pray to God every day. You know, it is a luxury that I get to do that. But there's some seasons where I'm frustrated and I'm wondering, man, God, is this really what you want me to do? So I think there's an understanding that we're going to go through seasons of fulfillment. And then there's also maybe going to be some seasons of challenge and frustration. And sometimes it's just realizing there's a bigger picture and a bigger God, and the season will pass. I don't know if that's helpful, if that gets to your question.
No, I mean, I think that's so, I mean, it's interesting. It just made me think about the 15-70-15 rule that you guys have, just in terms of, hey, am I in that 15 of what, you know, I feel like that's like what God's doing is in that 15% oftentimes. And I think just that constant connection. And I mean, I definitely feel that tension myself being in a secular workplace. Like, okay, how do I, you know, balance that and make it, you know, something that is, you know, where I know that I'm like in my vocation, I'm in the will of what God has. And I think it is difficult. You know, I think, in terms of the, I guess, like, in terms of someone that is, legal specific, like you mentioned, there was a lot of lawyers that were involved with launching the Uganda office. What was some of those experiences like, you know, I guess in terms of guys in that profession specifically and how they've seen, you know, being able to help the poor that are affected by unjust injustice?
Yeah, that's a great question. 15 years ago, IJM was a young organization, a small organization, and relied more back then on pro bono work done by American attorneys serving overseas. I had a good friend who from his, he was general counsel for a company here in the Twin Cities. He did a lot of pro bono work for IJM serving Ugandan widows whose land had been grabbed. And so he learned about Ugandan law. And unfortunately, IJM now has grown up, and we are now employing more national lawyers in the countries where we serve. So there's less opportunity now that IJM is a 20-year-old organization than there was when IJM was a 5-year-old organization for American attorneys to be engaged in a hands-on way than was 15 years ago. Having said that, there still is enormous opportunity for people with legal gifts, with legal experience, with legal minds, with legal training to engage with IJM, if for nothing else, than to raise awareness of the issues of law that we believe play a huge role in allowing fantastic development work that's being done all over the world to thrive. Let me give you an example. Gary Haugen, our CEO, tells the story of being in Africa. I don't even think he mentioned which country, but he said there was a poor community that was in need of clean water, and a large Christian NGO had built, had drilled a water well, and the community rejoiced because now there was clean water. But several months passed, and the stories were coming out that women and girls on their way from the village to the well were being raped. And so, of course, they stopped going to the well. So here's this wonderful opportunity for clean water that's not being accessed simply because the laws aren't being enforced. So what this NGO did, the solution they came up with was, well, let's drill another well closer to the village. Make it easier for the women and girls to get to the water. And Gary said everyone rejoiced. What a great solution that was. But he said, imagine if in the States, if on a college campus, there were stories coming out that women students were being raped on their way from the dorm to the library. He said the solution wouldn't be to build another library closer to the dorm. I mean, it's laughable, right?
Yeah.
The solution is, well, you start enforcing the law. Mm. And you get the police to do their job to begin investigating who are the rapists. Mm. Let's make some arrests here. Let's begin to work the legal system to put the bad actors behind bars. That's how you solve the problem. Mm. So Gary came away and he realized, you know what, there's all this fantastic development work that's being done the world over, but it's at risk simply because there are laws on the books that aren't being enforced.
Mm.
And so there's clean water, and there's houses built by Habitat, and there's new schools, and there's microfinance, and there's health clinics. But if laws aren't being enforced, everything is at risk. And Gary even has a name for it. He calls it the locust effect. Mm. It's as though locusts are eating away at all this wonderful work that's being done. And so the point to my long rambling story here is that there's no one like American legal professionals that can help Americans understand the importance of enforcing laws, even for international development work to thrive. And so, you know, we may not be using American attorneys to do pro bono work in Uganda anymore, but we would love for people with legal minds to help us to raise awareness and to talk about the importance of IJM's work the world over. We may not be drilling wells or building buildings or, you know, providing microloans, but the work that we're doing in the legal arena, we hope and pray, allows all that other work to thrive and to flourish.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's the infrastructure of a, you know, of society to be able to, you know, see that things are protected and things are just. I think that seems like the heart of God, you know.
Yeah, it does. And let's be honest. I mean, we in the States, we love to make jokes about lawyers and throw them under the bus. And, you know, we have fun at their expense. But the reality is the work that they do worldwide, especially among the poor and the most vulnerable, there's nothing laughable about it. It is life-giving. It's life-sustaining. But frankly, often it's overlooked because it may not be as flashy or as sexy as the new building or the new clinic or the clean water. We think there's a missing piece there, the foundational piece, as you just said, which really is so important that really allows the other great development work to be there at its best.
And how would you say, you know, and obviously we'll get into like how people can get involved in Chicago and stuff, but in terms of, you know, because you mentioned, I love that quote, that which I can't not do, like as a vocation. I just feel like that's such a powerful thing, because I feel like it takes you out of the framework of, oh, is this difficult? It's like, well, I can't not do it.
Right,
and, you know, and I think, you know, a lot of people may be involved in, maybe they don't feel like they're there, you know, like they're kind of, one guy that I spoke to mentioned like about Joseph and how he was in a period of slavery for so long. And then he kind of started saving people from famine and all these great things that he did, but he started kind of in that slavery time. How would you, you know, in terms of, you know, like understanding God's call and then, you know, also knowing you have to provide for your family and provide for what's around you, but also, you know, there's that, the desire for vocation that you can't not do certain things. How do you balance that, like in a relational context with God and, you know, like what does that look like? I guess.
Yeah. Let me lean on another author that I've found helpful, Frederick Buechner. And he has a great quote. I wrote it down to make sure I don't mess it up, but I've leaned on this quote for a long time. The place God calls, vocation, call, is the place where your deep gladness and the world's deep hunger meet. So deep gladness, deep hunger. I've had jobs where maybe I'm not real glad all the time, but I realize it's meeting a deep hunger. And so, you know what, you'll go along in a little bit. I think too often the flip side is just the other. It's you're very glad, you're joyful in what you're doing, but it's not meeting a deep hunger, you know. And I think you've got to ask, how long can I do a job that makes widgets when I realize there's deep hunger out there that my calling is not reaching? If you're in a job where you are neither deeply glad nor you're meeting deep hunger, that's where I really think you've got to ask, whose call are you responding to? You know, the word vocation comes from the Latin vocare, which means to call. And if we believe in vocation, if we believe that it's all about a calling, then I think we who follow Jesus have to understand a calling implies a caller. And there's a lot of different callers out there. You know, whose call are we responding too. And I think at some point you've got to come to grips with, if you're in a job that you are simply not happy with, you've got to figure out how long can I respond to a call that either isn't making me deeply glad or isn't meeting a deep hunger. And if I'm responding to that call that's neither making me glad nor meeting a deep hunger, is that the caller that I want to respond to? Now, again, I don't say that flippantly, and I know there are times when you're on a career path that you just don't see any options, you know? And it's like, okay, I've got 3 kids and a mortgage and, you know, I need health care. Yeah, right? So it's easy for me to say that from my high horse, hey, if you're not deeply glad or meeting a deep hunger, then find something new to do. And I don't mean to say that it's easy. But I do think if you are in that position, then you need to have a heart-to-heart with God. And maybe you already are. But that's where that's a tough spot to be in, I guess. So,
I think it's interesting. I mean, I think there's, you know, what you're saying, like, you can feel the weight of it. You know, and I think it's,
yes,
there's a, you know, we have one life to live. You know, there's a right caller that's calling that, you know, in the Christian faith, he gave his life for us. So it's like, I can sense that urgency that you're speaking to.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm the youngest of 3 sons. The irony is both of my older brothers were religion majors in college, and I wasn't. And both of my older brothers are in the business world. and I became a pastor. It's like, how did that work? One of my brothers works for a large company here in the Twin Cities called Cargill, loves his job, is very good at what he does, brings his faith to the workplace as much as he's able, and I think really has found, has embraced, has felt like the Lord has used his faith in a secular work setting. My other brother is not satisfied with his work, and really struggles with, okay, I'm good at what I do, but it's not really meeting anyone's deep hunger. He works at a music store. He loves music. He loves beautiful music, but it just isn't, you know, it really isn't feeding his soul and his spirit. So I've seen it in all 3 of us, the 3 boys, now that we're adults. We've had different seasons in our careers and our vocations where we have felt very much like we're doing what God wants us to do. One of us in a secular setting, one of us in a faith-based setting. And then there's a third who just hasn't quite found his sweet spot. So it's tough. I mean, it's, I guess the point I'm making is, even though you may have great authors and nice quotes you can latch onto, it doesn't mean that it always works out exactly the way you'd hope or wish.
Yeah, that's, I think that's great, because I think it's easy to kind of go one direction and say, well, this is my vocation because it's where God has me.
Right.
And not feel some of the urgency of, you know what, let's wrestle with this. And I think that's, you know, you don't want to be unhappy and think the grass is always greener, but I love that challenge. I think that, you know, definitely speaks to the guys in our group for sure.
Yeah, and I think that's what, not even knowing your group, I think just the fact that you have a group. You have a group of guys for whom these are issues, life issues, that you bring to each other. That's what community is about, right? I mean, a Christian community is, you wrestle together with the deep issues of faith. And my heart really goes out to people who don't have that kind of setting. They may be people of faith, but they don't have a smaller group of trusted friends, family that they can turn to say, wow, I'm really wrestling with this. I don't know what to do with this. because we're not called to handle it together, and we're not called to handle it alone. I think we really are called to bring it to bear with each other. We are, you know, iron sharpens iron, bear each other's burdens. So for me, part of the spiritual discipline is, I approach the throne of grace every day on my own, but my wife and I are in a couples group, and once a month, we get together and we break it down and we laugh and we cry and we pray together. I'm in a men's group and we do that together. You have to, I believe, have other outlets where you can bring these issues to bear with honesty and transparency. Otherwise, wow, the folks who don't have that, those are the ones who I feel for.
No, that's a great challenge. So, you know, just kind of, you know, would love to hear more about like what's happening in the Big Ten states and, you know, anything, you know, that you have going on, ways that we could kind of keep in touch and hear about things and be involved in awareness or whatever, you know, what's going on with you?
Great. Yeah. So I'm based in Minneapolis. I get to Chicago about every 4 to 6 weeks. So Chicago and Minneapolis are two of 10 key strategy cities that IJM is really focusing on to build up our engagement efforts. So we have just started this year a group of volunteer leaders in Chicagoland, people who love IJM and want to kind of spread the message about what IJM does and how other people can get on board with who we are and what we do. So we have a prayer coordinator. We have a student coordinator. We have something called Freedom Partners, which are people who say, you know what, I love IJM and I want to support their work financially. And they give $24 a month and they become what we call a Freedom Partner. And we have a Freedom Partner coordinator in the Chicagoland area that kind of shares this message in the workplace, in churches, in small groups to say, hey, if you want to really support IJM, here's a great way to do it. So there's a growing group in Chicago that is meeting on a monthly basis now to really help spread the word about who IJM is and how to get engaged. So if that's something that would be of interest to your group, I'd be happy to, to put you in touch with somebody there, or the next time I'm in town, it would be helpful. I'd love to meet with anyone there who's interested. So my point being, we're trying to take IJM, make it a little more local. It's a tough thing to do, quite frankly, because IJM will never be a Habitat for Humanity, where there are obvious, tangible, hands-on opportunities to engage. And IJM just isn't that. In fact, just the opposite. We want to keep well-intentioned Americans at arm's length from the victims that we are rescuing, because they're vulnerable people, and to have them retell their story over and over and over can be traumatic. So it's a tension that we're really trying to manage, because the people we're serving are very vulnerable. But at the same time, we want to be transparent and accessible in our work. So we're figuring this out. Again, we're 20 years old. We're just out of adolescence. We don't have this down yet. But we'd love to learn how to do it better with people like yourself, if you're interested.
No, that's I just love the call to action, and I think it's so important for people to really wrestle with it. And you know, I think that's what's unique about people in faith, you know, is like there's some deeper things you got to really wrestle with. I think I definitely appreciate that call from you just on your end. I think you know, we love hearing about IJM and just the great work that you guys do. I think it's inspirational, because, you know, often we get so, it's so easy to fall into, oh, I got to make money, I got to climb the corporate ladder, and not think about the the awareness of, man, there's people that literally like are getting abused by the police, you know, and slaves, you know, and right. I think we forget that often. So I definitely really appreciate that.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. One more, just in closing, if we are closing. So Gary Haugen, I mentioned before, he's the founder of IGM. He's our CEO. He really, his story is remarkable. He was a Department of Justice attorney in the 90s and was called by the UN to go to Rwanda after the genocide. And he led the investigation from the United Nations in the aftermath of the genocide and came back to his DOJ job in D.C. and realized, I can't unsee what I just saw and experienced. And so he started IJM to make a difference in issues of law and justice. He's got a book, and this will be the last author I toss at you, but his book is called Just Courage. It's probably 10 years old now, but it's a great message about we as followers of Jesus were created for adventure, right? And part of the adventure is to pursue justice. And I guess my final word to you and to the guys that you meet with, if the work that you're doing on a regular or a semi-regular basis doesn't cause you to be courageous or to take risks or to pursue noble causes of justice and truth, then that's where I think, you know, as much as you're able, ask God the question, what am I missing? You know, what could I be doing either in the job you've called me to now, or maybe in a new calling? What can I be doing to pursue the adventurous calling of justice that I believe you created me to pursue? I think for many of us, being a Christian means going to church on Sunday morning, maybe having a small group meeting every now and then, and being a good neighbor. But you're never really challenged. You're never really called to be courageous or brave. And I think especially for us as men, if that peace isn't being fed, maybe there's a dissatisfaction that the Lord wants to satisfy in a new way. And if it's not a new job, maybe it's through a volunteer effort that really, you know, gets those juices flowing and allows you to embrace or to pursue justice in a new arena that your work isn't. And if that's the case, maybe IGM is a way that can stir up some of that. And if so, I'd love to explore whether we can help make that happen.
Oh man, I love it. Amen.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm helpless.
Hey guys, quick reminder again to join the Facebook group. Search Daniel Dinners on Facebook to request to join the private group. If we contribute to the discussion, the more we help not only ourselves, but others as well.